Hey guys, John here. Before we begin today's episode of Talk About That, Johnny and I just wanted to record a little intro and just kind of give you guys a little context to today's episode. So Johnny had several shows out of town over this past weekend, so he and I got together earlier than usual this week. It was actually on Wednesday, January the 6th, to record this episode that you're about to listen to. And so obviously, that is the day of the tragic events at our nation's capital when insurrectionists and others enacted violence, killing a police officer, and others, of course, lost their lives as well. And it's a sad day in our nation. We just wanted you to know it was actually happening. We referenced it towards the end. It was beginning to happen as we were recording it. And so we do talk about a lot of serious things on this podcast, but we wanted you to also not be surprised or wonder why we just kind of start off joking and do what we normally do as if nothing had happened. So you can expect next Monday's podcast to be when we really sort of unpack our thoughts on the tragedies of that day. Obviously, our thoughts and our prayers are with those families who lost people on the in the attacks. And obviously, we invite everyone to all the things we always talk about in this podcast about listening rightly and adhering to the gospel above any nationalistic rhetoric or other things, especially at this critical moment in all of our lives. And so anyway, we just want you to kind of understand where we are and hope you enjoyed today's episode. Let's get started. Another Monday, another Talk About That. I'm John.
We're back, baby.
Yeah, here's my buddy Johnny.
Yes. I forgot my name for a second. I'm sorry.
What was it?
I had someone reach out to me that's an avid listener of the show.
Yeah?
Who said they wished that they'd known that I had so many bins because they needed to borrow some bins. I said, come on over. So that offer still stands. Nice. It'd be a great reason to get rid of some. Hey, this person needed some bins. I have a bin. It's like have a penny, leave a penny.
I know you shamed me for throwing away bins last week.
Oh, this person was mad too. They said, John's a weird. They said, John is a weirdo.
Wow.
He threw away bins. I go, he drinks coffee in the shower. So what do you think is going to happen with that kind of person?
It's the greatest of all things. Listen, Johnny, I needed the space.
So you're drinking coffee in the shower and you're like, the epiphany you had was, I got to throw away these bins.
I didn't set out to
You're
throw
hopped
away.
Up on caffeine. You didn't set out. You accidentally threw them away?
I didn't set out to throw them away. I started cleaning things.
Yeah.
And when a bin was full of a bunch of garbage, instead of emptying it into garbage, I was like, this bin's cracked or warped, or I'm just going to go ahead and throw it out.
All this garbage into it.
I did look at my wife at one point and go, look, we have all these misshapen, unmatched bins.
I think what you looked at her and said was, we can afford to buy new bins.
Well, what I said was, look, we could make, if we need a bunch of bins, we could make a $200 investment.
Right.
And we could get a bunch of bins that all match and stack properly and all those things. So what if we just restarted our bin life? Is that such a bad, shameful
thing? It's a new year. It's a new you.
Restart your bin life.
A new bin.
Come on, guys. There was something gross that happened to me last night.
Okay. Well, this seems like the proper forum.
Yeah. I haven't told you about this like pre-podcast. So I don't know if this happened the first time to me when I was in high school. So I have my ears produce an enormous amount of wax.
Oh.
My brother-in-law is the same way. Like his mom, I remember when I started dating Laura, Greg would lay on the floor. You ever seen somebody burn?
Oh, the candle thing.
The candle thing. It doesn't work for me.
What do you mean?
It doesn't do anything. I think it's a myth. Like people think afterwards there's like this residue left over. Like, look, there's all the wax
and
that came out.
It sticks to the candle thing.
But it's just the thing. It's just the candle you burn. I don't think it's not really earwax that's come out. But people
I feel
think
like
it
dripping
is.
Hot wax into your head.
You're not. It comes out. It supposedly somehow creates like this circular vacuum and it's supposed to bring it out.
I see.
And then the people like...
For some reason, I'm imagining like them dripping the hot wax and then pulling out a... ear-shaped.
It'd be amazing if it'd do that. You know, like Shrek, where he makes his own candle out of his earwax?
Yeah, like it pulls the regular wax in out with it.
Supposedly it does that, but it doesn't do it for me. So anyway, so when I was in high school, I went on a trip to Panama City with a bunch of friends. And
you ran out of candles, and you were like, I got this, fellas.
We loved our candles, Panama City, senior year. And I went underwater. Yeah. In one of the pools, and I went totally deaf in one of my ears. And so, very uncomfortable. So I finally figured out, it's the first time it ever happened, and I got some earwax removal stuff, and took all day. Like, it was a horror. I was deaf for like 2 days. You know, by the next night, I finally put something in there in desperation and took the little
a little squeezy bulb.
Yeah, what do you? Yeah, bulb.
Suction. Yeah, guy.
And began flushing and like, dude, sorry, listener, but stuff came out.
Right.
Like an amazing amount of
like
stuff.
Like a little tiny Tonka truck. Like a tiny micro machines that were in your ear.
So much. So it happened. I was in the shower yesterday and I went deaf again. And so, yeah, I...
What if Beethoven was just like really clogged up? Do we know?
Maybe the whole time. Yeah. But it was like a plug. Like a plug came out. Like it was a good...
But it feels good when it...
Yeah, so I was like, oh my gosh. Like and then my right ear feels like now that I have hearing loss because, yeah. So I did it in the right ear too. A little bit came out, but not that level. So I'm just kind of wondering. I had all these thoughts. Like, I wonder, because, you know, all these years us playing music, I think we have a little bit, I may have a little bit of hearing loss.
Yeah, we were around a lot of loud sounds.
Yeah, like.
A lot of decibel levels were pushed.
Oh my goodness. And then I ran a weed eater for a lot of my life too.
Oh, right. And, you got the low hum.
And so my wife's always like, you can't hear anything, you know, but I think actually.
I think every wife says that.
I hear things that she doesn't hear all the time. I'm like, I think my hearing's better than yours. And I started thinking, I wonder if by divine providence, yeah, this whole time, all of this earwax buildup has actually protected my hearing. Like it's a layer between the damage and my eardrum. Come on, guys.
What the devil meant for bad.
I need any audiologists to write in and
you
let
had to
us
cake
know.
Your regular eardrums to protect you from Seth's drums.
It's true.
Yeah. Who's our church drummer?
Drummers on the cymbals, they're the ones that'll get you.
So they there was a story years ago about a kid this was 10, 15 years ago. A kid who had a terrible smell. Like, you hear this story?
No.
Terrible, like...
Well, I've known a lot of kids with terrible smells.
They couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, it's
not a remarkable story, kids smell. This was like a, you know, fifth grader or whatever. Maybe he was a younger kid. I can't remember. Anyway, he's smelling. The parents are like, oh, he gets sent home from school. It's too bad. It's just like he smells like rotted whatever. And the kid's like, we're bathing in. We're doing the right thing. Blah, blah, blah. It's not us. And then they take him to the doctor. The doctor can't figure out anything wrong with him. Like, where's the smell coming from? And then they did an ear exam. There was a rotted Rice Krispie in his ear.
This has got to be an urban legend.
I'm telling you, a rotten Rice Krispie produced, I don't know.
And why would a Rice Krispie taste or smell so bad?
Well, first of all, how the Rice Krispie, it's almost like a toddler that just puts, you know, things in their nose and in their ears.
Yeah, but it's like a processed piece of.
Sure.
I mean.
Something was in there that as
I thought you were going to say, like, there was a baby bird or something. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a Rice Krispie.
Yeah, that's the old thing about the mole on your face and the woman, you know, you cut it and then the baby spiders go everywhere. Yeah. There was a movie like that.
Yeah.
This wasn't that. This was just a really stinky Rice Krispie.
See, that makes me think it's true.
Right.
Because it's...
Right, if it was going to be like a creature.
It's not salacious at all.
Right. Yeah. It's delicious.
Oh my goodness.
So I don't know, but that I'll probably look that up when we're done and be like, that's not true, but I'm telling you, I heard it forever that the kid stunk and it was a Rice Krispie.
The Snopes like debunk things like that, or is it just like political?
I think they do, yeah. The original reason was like urban legends like that, yeah, that get passed around in email forwards and
yeah.
Back in the day it was like faxes would come through. Remember that? You ever get
yeah.
those?
Oh yeah.
Faxes would come through to be like just fun sounds to be funny things that you would spread, but it's like that's how things, which I still don't know how fax machines work. I think it's crazy to me that like words, we send a document and through a phone line, it comes out as words on a page on your end. That's odd to me. It doesn't make any sense.
I'm a little.
You're okay with it. I'm saying like, I don't understand how it works. Here's another one. You ever see like the history of like records? Like there was these old vases and when they find old pottery, it had grooves in it. And they think that it like was the first generation of them discovering sound waves could be stored in something. And they think that's what led to like recording on wax with records. And so, but the idea that somebody would go, you know what I bet we could do? You play your music and I'll put it on this plastic thing. And then we put a needle down. And it'll vibrate through this, and then we'll put this horn on the other end of it. Like, who came up with that? Like, who had the idea to go? I know who came up with it. We could look it up. But I'm saying, like, how did that thought process go? They're like, you know what we need to do?
Dr. Record Player.
It's like, who was the first guy? That's the weird thing to think. Like, who was the first person to drink milk from a cow? That's a weird dude, you know? I'm not saying it wasn't a revolutionary act and it's great.
Right.
But the first person to be like, you know what we ought to do? I think I'm going to have some of this. It doesn't belong to me. It's not from me. But I'm going to see what happens. I'm going to put this on my Rice Krispies and shove it in my ear.
If you really do dismiss your modern bias,
right.
The record player really is. We act like, oh my goodness, antiquated.
It's a
technology.
Miracle.
We don't know how it works. Maybe someone listening knows how it works. That audiologist who understands how earwax works. But the majority of us, we just kind of take it like, I think I understand better how you convert ones and zeros into a code than I do that analog sort of like, oh my gosh, what really is embedded in that wax that dries that allows the
actual
sound?
How does it know every time to make that the guitar solo? Like every time it goes, the record goes into this groove, it's that sound that we preserved somehow. Like,
what did they do? How did they put that into the groove? I want to know, guys.
Dude,
we
need to get into the groove.
This is...
I don't know. But it's weird. But I think it's cool to be... I like that I'm still amazed by things. I was thinking about that the other day because Curry said she listened to a couple episodes ago, and we were talking about the Kohl's commercial, and she said just you describing the commercial made her cry. Huh. And she's seen the commercial. And I remember telling you the story on the air, and it made you tear up.
Yeah.
Just me telling the story, and I go, you know, that's kind of like a cool feature of humanity.
Yeah.
And sometimes we work it out of ourselves, like we do enough things and we go around and we get in the world and we're taught to be more grown up and whatever. And then we weed that out of our personalities in some way, especially guys.
Yeah.
But I'm so glad that I still am like a big softy in a lot of ways. Like when I hear somebody's hurting, it bothers me. And when a movie, I can totally tell what the movie's doing. I'm watching Cobra Kai. So on Netflix, and there's a scene where he goes back to Okinawa to try to reconnect with Mr. Miyagi, who's passed, and they read a letter. You know, his old friend reads a letter, and it's in Mr. Miyagi's voice, basically. And he mentions him in the letter, Daniel-san, as blah blah blah. And I was like, I know what they're doing here. They're trying to get one over on me. They're trying to make me cry.
Cashing in on your childhood.
They're cashing in on Mr. Miyagi being this touchstone in my childhood.
Yeah.
And you know what? It worked.
You can't stop it.
Niagara Falls. Mr. Miyagi.
Wow.
And so it's like, but part of me is like, I see what they're doing. But part of me is like, I love that. That's a thing that happens.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah. I told you I cleaned out my garage. Obviously, the famous or infamous.
You wept over the tubs, incident. Didn't you?
So I put out a little speaker, a little Bluetooth speaker, and I went to... Like, we have 90s playlists and stuff. Well, they had a 90s Christian playlist.
Yeah.
Like, just infinite numbers of 90s, because I was out there for 2 days.
You know?
So I put out this 90s Christian playlist and went down memory lane, you know, and a lot of things. I mean, a lot of them I just skipped, but a lot of them was like, oh, I forgot about this song or this group. And to your point, Butterfly Kisses came up. I saw it with Bob Carlisle. And... this is confession. I'm telling you, I look down on that song.
Oh, sure.
Like, I'm looking down on it right now. Like, I literally thought, I'm not going to listen to that. And I pushed next on it.
But now you have a teenage daughter.
The truth is, and I thought this at the time, but I didn't really think about it all the way through as you said this, but the truth is, I do. I look down on it like, oh, that's cheesy music.
Right.
But the truth is, I cry every time. Before I had a daughter, I will tear up. I'm sorry, guys. And maybe, again, like you said, it makes me less.
Well, you're
whatever.
Not the only one. I think there was a time when that song was gigantic, and he's done interviews since then, but he said that he was offered like six figures to come sing that at people's weddings. Like, these rich people would be like, come sing this at my daughter's wedding. And he turned them all down. And now he's like, you know what? I should have thought of that. Like, you know, because obviously, you know, that was his peak. That was a huge peak. And he said, you know, he's going, maybe I should have thought about cashing in, you know. I'm not selling out. I'm buying in. And that the old, but that song, we all kind of were like, oh, here we go, schmaltz. But there was an effect. Yeah. Especially if you have kids, I would think it's like you have a daughter.
You do. When you get her, she's in the bride room at the end, you know, she'll change her name today. That line is like, oh, like I'm telling you right now, oh no, like that just gets me.
Yeah. That's why she's going to keep her name. Right?
She'll make a promise and I'll give her away. And you're just like, oh Jesus, no, this is supposed to be a great moment forthcoming someday in my life. And it will be. But butterfly kisses right now, again, since before I had kids.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, I will say this, Johnny. There are others that I look down on that I don't have that reaction from.
Well, yeah, like Christmas shoes.
That was what I was about to say.
Yeah.
Christmas shoes is an abomination to me. Like, I can't.
Like, you see the manipulation. It's so obvious.
Because it was an email forward, wasn't it?
Which I don't know, but.
I don't know.
Yeah, there's some of it where you just go, all right, I see what you're doing. Do a better job of it. This is bad.
But then some listeners, and again, I was teasing when I called it abomination, but some listeners
are there somebody out there that's going to defend Christmas shoes?
Yeah,
and we don't want you as a listener. Let me just say, I'm just kidding.
That's not true. Please,
we love that you're listening.
We want all of you as listeners. We can't afford to lose listeners. But I want to figure out is that somebody's butterfly kisses. I get that, you know.
Oh,
so
right.
I don't want to.
Oh, if it's a touchstone, like your family song, you shared it with your own mom.
Because I've talked to people, and they've
lost their parent or whatever. Sure,
they defend that, you know. Like, and I just, for me, yes, it's like pandering. Yeah. It's they've made this song to get you to listen to this song, but I don't know.
I just I get weepy sometimes where like it's embarrassing. I remember we watched, there was a video that we put together on a mission. Like, I went to the Bolivian Hope Center with you guys, and then you guys went back another time that I wasn't able to go.
Yeah.
So I was the big Sunday service when you guys come back, and then Jeffrey's put together the big video recap.
Gosh.
And I'd already been, so I knew what was coming in a lot of ways.
An epic video.
But I think they opened the home in y'all's video, and I was there like fixing it right before the opening. Like, we were doing the staining doors and we were getting ready, but it wasn't open yet. So I think it was the first Christmas in the Bolivian Hope Center. So the kids are opening presents. And I remember at the end of the video, I was on the front row. I think I got there late. So I'm on the front row with Curry. Watch this video. And then the music is playing and he put the perfect song with it. And then at the end, it's just this logo. And then it goes quiet. I thought it wasn't going to be quiet. And I made a sound like this guttural, like, hum, like this. It was like I couldn't catch my breath as I was weeping. And it was like people looked at me and I was like, all right, this is... But it was like I couldn't. It was so like a visceral reaction.
We were all weeping.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the Jeffrey Holland. We called that day Sermon by Pod.
Yeah, that's right.
It was like a 20-minute video, I think. And it was like the most epic. Because we'd all been there, like you said. But it's like he took this amazing experience and somehow captured it and then translated it. Because here's the thing, you see some, like you say, it was like butterfly kisses, as if you'd really given your daughter away. We had experienced that.
Yeah.
And now he was putting it somehow visually, and the music and all the stuff was like in slow-mo, the kids with the water when they were playing games coming across their face.
Yeah.
It was just like, even when you're driving, we're all in the back of the trucks driving away and the kids are running to say bye and waving, and it was just like... Oh, he found a way. I mean, Jeffrey to this day.
It's great. He's a great storyteller. I'll tell you, speaking of Jeffrey, so he does these cinematic wedding videos.
Yeah.
And again, there's tricks of the trade. There's things. And I mean, my wedding was, my marriage has been great. My wedding was a disaster. We had so many things go wrong. And it was hilarious. Stories for another day. But so when I see these cinematic weddings, I was like, geez, this wasn't around when I was, you know, I mean, you get this like little mini movie that makes your day look perfect with drone footage and all this stuff. But I remember one of the earliest things he did where he sent out, he would share like, hey, here's a new wedding. You know, here's Kylie and Jeff. And you're like, oh, here, Kylie and Jeff. I'll watch this for Jeffrey just to tell him he's doing a good job. This was like early on. He'd been doing this a couple of years. And he did this thing where he's showing the rehearsal dinner and they're walking down in street clothes and they go behind this tree. So it's a fluid shot of them walking down the aisle and then it goes behind a tree. And when it comes on the other side of the tree, it's the wedding day and everyone's in all white and they're, and I'm not kidding you. Like I was like, my hands went up like touchdown. Like I didn't even know it was happening, you know, like what?
Yeah.
Like he captured this emotion for these people who I do not know.
Yeah.
I don't know. So there's tricks like that, but I just go, you know what? I don't care. You can trick me. I'll let you trick me. It's like when I go to a magic show, I'm not like, he's using magnets. Like, I'm not that guy. There's a Pete Holmes bit about that. Like, why would you go to a magic show and try to ruin it for yourself? But right. We do it. But like, I'm not that guy. I want to believe you're a warlock. I need to believe it. I want to believe it's real.
Now, I remember Jeffrey's office used to be this office.
Yeah.
Remember that? And there's still a couple things left over in here. So my desk is Jeffrey's old desk, and my office was across the hall. And I remember we told the story before, but he, you know, he would work on church stuff, but we allowed him, hey, man, use the space for whatever you need kind of thing. So he was editing all kinds of stuff. And Allison, we had just finished at like a overdrive retreat, which is our leadership team kind of thing. And Jeffrey was working, and she was still here later for some reason. And I just remember the day that she walked over and stood behind him while he was editing one of those wedding videos. And I was listening. The doors were both open, obviously. And I was listening to them. She was asking all kinds of questions. And I just remember thinking, like, this is it. Like, if someone recognizes that Jeffrey, like you said, is a masterful, romantic storyteller with what he does, you know? And she did. She fell in love with him. They got married. They have two kids. You know, like it was – but I remember, like – listening in, not eavesdropping, but like, I wonder where this might go when someone realizes that this guy's got like an epic, like almost sixth sense about these kinds of things. Of course, then he did so many things when they were dating, like, you know, take her up in a hot air balloon, did all kinds of stuff, made us all.
Oh, absolutely.
And I did great things, I think, when we were dating, but he made me look bad.
My favorite thing, though, about them is that they still don't have, he still has not done their wedding video. It's like the plumber who has leaky pipes at home or whatever.
It's so great.
And he may have done it by now, but I just know that like as of like 6 months ago, we were laughing about it in group because he's in my small group. We were laughing about that. Like, yeah, he still hasn't finished our video.
I thought about that with my dad when we did all these videos, you know, how long it took me. I mean, I literally, for one of my livings, spend my life putting people's stories together and all their details and mapping it out, and I've spreadsheet things, storyboarding it, getting it correct, and like literally for all the history that my dad had made, I'd never done it for our own family.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah, it's true. It's
Being the family historian is like less, it feels more like a job, but when you're doing it for somebody, it's easier to romanticize somebody else's story too. I think that's just true in general. Because you feel, if your own story feels very ordinary sometimes, I guess, you know? I don't know.
Well, the hardest voice for me to write in is my own. I don't trust it as much. I'm learning, you know. The book I just wrote with Reggie, that was a little easier to write as myself because I get to also take his stuff and write.
Right. Like
I get
it's like to, point, counterpoint or whatever. Yeah. There's something to that in comedy too where, like, if I'm watching somebody's show, like, I have good friends in comedy. Marty Simpson is one. I have another friend who I just did some shows with, Sean Reynolds, and we did these two shows together in Nebraska over the near the holidays. And Sean's really like, he's kind of a young comic, but he's been doing it 8 years, which is like really young still. I've been doing it like 11 years and it's still really young because you're still finding your voice. But when you've seen somebody's show two or three times, as I have with Marty and Sean, I've seen Marty's hour like 20 times maybe, and he's seen mine 20 times. There's like a thing of, you know how to give them tips. Like, hey, you mentioned your uncle here. This should be a callback. Your uncle should come back in to this bit. Or you said something about, you know, whatever, and you should bring this back. And they'll go, it's like you're too close to it to see it for yourself. You get the best advice from somebody who really has seen your show. Because, like, if you do a joke the same way 100 times, it gets like, it's like brain mapping and like a template. It's locked in somehow. And then you forget to move forward with it. So it doesn't advance like it should. But with somebody else's show, you can look at it and be like, oh, well, why doesn't he just do this? I thought you were going to say this. And they'll go, why didn't I say that? Or whatever. And it's like this huge. So I love it when comics will do that for me. Sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's not great because they're not writing in your voice. They're like, well, I would have said this. And you're like, yeah, but I don't say things like that.
But you do that to my sermons all the time.
Oh, really?
And I love it. But I'll get done and you'll go, ooh, I thought you were going to go. And you'd say this one thing I could have said.
Yeah.
I'm like, ah, dang it. That would have been great. You know, why didn't you? That's why you should hear all my sermons.
The dry run. I need to.
No, and that's, have you watched Queen's Gambit?
I haven't yet. I've heard. We'll edit that out. No, I've heard great things. I heard great things about the Queen's Gambit. No, I've heard it's awesome, and I need to look into it. Obviously, I'm in Cobra Kai right now, so
I see that.
It's a very intellectual exercise. You got to watch Cobra Kai, dude.
That's great. Maybe. We finished Endeavor. We caught up on Endeavor.
See, that makes me sense. Now you're being like, Endeavor. It's a British BBC show, right?
Yeah.
So,
but it's
the opposite of Cobra Kai.
Well, it's PBS. But I think that's the same thing.
Well, it's not the same thing as BBC, but it's
Masterpiece.
Thank you.
Theater on PBS, which I may have a BBC connection. So
yeah.
At any rate, I'm caught up on it, and now we watch Queen's Gambit, which is a temporary. It's not a repeating season. It's like just a
What is it called? Limited.
Yeah, limited series. We used to call that a mini series back in the day.
Yeah.
But I don't want to give it away. I had a point of asking that.
Oh yeah, don't tell me.
But
things.
It's not a. I would just say this, that there's a cool like collaboration element that comes in at the very, very end because of the way Americans versus Europeans or Russians and others who are, you know, the masters. But it's fascinating, and it's set in the 60s, but it's a fascinating way of seeing how Americans view, intellect and, you know, dominance. And so there's just a storyline there that's really interesting, because I think collaboration is, like, even though I'm kind of a loner and been prideful most of my life and think I can figure things out for myself, you know, that's God's gift to me.
Yeah,
is not just the collaborative writing, but like the knowledge that someone doesn't have to necessarily know more than me in order to improve what's happening in me.
Like, right, they can know more about just a piece.
Yeah.
And that's enough.
And so there's a real, like, humbling, like, this whole time you could only receive from people you thought were, like, superior. And it's such a linear way of thinking and such a non-gospel way of thinking, is that only those who are superior, and you know, which makes you think that you're superior, which is that it turns out all of that was not true. Like, that there's this real beauty in what Paul says, something like, I'm going to quote, like, I don't know, even it may be the Living Bible here, Johnny, because it's out there. But basically, he makes this statement that you should enjoy the company of just regular people. Have you ever read that scripture?
Yeah.
Like, just don't think of yourself higher than others, but enjoy the company of just kind of regular people. I mean, I don't want to use the term common, but that's the idea. Like, don't be an elitist. Paul was an elitist intellectually.
Yeah.
But he's saying enjoy the company. You know, God is working in all of these things. I think there's just a...
I think that's why I do this podcast.
You're just hanging out with the commoners.
This is me slumming it.
Well, again, I say that with all... That is part of my testimony, I'd say, if you want to use that word, my story. Yeah, I mean, I don't think I ever... I love hanging out with kids my whole life. It's not like I feel... superior to people, those kinds of things.
But maybe hanging out with kids made you feel even more intellectual, because they have to glean wisdom from you. So it made you, it stroked your ego some.
And they liked that too. It sets you in this place where it's hard to receive from people you think don't know more than you, whatever the heck that means. And I think there's wisdom. I'm not going to take advice necessarily. Advice is the category we put all that into.
Right.
Oh, this is all advice. Well, right. I mean, advice is a very narrow category. And I think for Christians and even just people, we kind of put everything. If someone calls me and asks for advice and I don't know them, you know, then it's real narrow. It's about, hey, how do you write a book proposal? You know, I get one of those calls every month.
Yeah.
You know, hey, can you help me? My friend is looking to write a book. But there's no, like, real sharing. I'll end up sharing more, but there's a limit to how much I can really share, because it's a very narrow place. But a relationship... Then, you know, where someone may not know as much about this in that area, and I don't know as much about that in that area of their life, then, like, over time, instead of us just sitting around trading advice, like, we're trading life.
Yeah.
And you end up being sharpened or built up in ways you never thought possible, because you would have been too prideful to look at it before.
Well, that's a principle in comedy. There's always a principle in comedy. There's a principle called turning the tables. There's like 7 or 8 principles of comedy. Techniques in comedy that I learned when I was taking a comedy writing class. One of them is turning the... Because I looked at my show, it made me look at my jokes and go, I have like 2 of these in my act.
Yeah.
You know, I've got like wordplay in my act, and I have
like a testimonial or, you know, I'm editorializing from my point of view. But there's so many others that I wasn't using. And one of them was turning the tables, which is when you have a situation like the cop pulls you over. Do you know why I stopped you? And you say, I don't know. You wanted a donut. You're turning the tables on the authoritative person. Right. The I quit story from your job as a joke. But one of my favorite principles of comedy is like the city mouse, country mouse kind of a vibe where you're getting a point of view from somebody who's the simpler person and they have more wisdom in them.
Yeah.
And then sometimes they even outdo the uppity city person. In clown culture, it's called a Toby, where the country bumpkin clown gets the best of the uppity whatever person. That's what the Andy Griffith Show is.
Yep.
He's the simple, the whole show is based on, we live simply here. We just tell the truth and
except he lies every episode.
Yeah. But we're home for dinner and we're whatever. We're honest, simple people and that's enough. And, you know, you see it throughout. It's one of there's a show called Ted Lasso on right now that I've tried to get you to watch.
I'm going
to
watch it. It's on our list.
It's that because everyone in the show is out for themselves. And then you got this guy who's this completely pie-eyed optimist and it stands out so much. And he wins despite himself at life. It's fascinating. So, and it's fascinating too because of what it could do to television writing in the future. Because it totally ups. It's like a disruptor.
Hmm.
You see. I mean, I'm telling you now. There's meetings in studios where they're going, we didn't see this coming. Turns out we got to start.
Don't spoil it.
You got to start writing like optimists. We got to start figuring out how to positivity. You got to put it back. Because, like, again, we see the positivity. We're so cynical now as a culture that we're like, oh boy, this is going to be cheesy. But somehow they figured out a way not to make it cheesy. And so that's great. That's a great. But anyway, that whole thing of like, yeah, we can learn from somebody who doesn't have the same life experience as us. Even if they're less educated than us, they have something. They have something to say.
Yeah.
And sometimes we cut ourselves off.
Well, and there's such an arrogance to thinking that your education or your experiences cause you to not be able. I mean, it's a real place of repentance over time. I look back. I don't have a lot of regrets are not the right word because I feel forgiven. I feel that I'm being – like I've been broken my whole life. It's okay because that's what grace is for. And then I'm being healed. So it's not like, again, because I say these things, people are like, well, you shouldn't feel bad. Everything's, you know, I don't feel bad, but I can see it clearly. I look back at how much I did not let, whether it was kids or youth leaders or whomever, I did not let them speak into me. They were all happy to let me speak into them. And how many times I didn't mean to do it, but it was very real that they would say something. And I would just be like, well, you know, like if it was a tad theologically off, you know.
It was discarded at all then.
Yeah. And I would gently do it. I wouldn't make them feel bad. But what I was trying to do was help them be closer, you know, to you're instructing, you know, and there's a place for that. It's not like you just accept all things. But there's probably a lot of things that were said that like I wasn't really open minded to the idea that maybe that was something I could have learned.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm trying to do that differently as a father. You know, I'm trying to like, okay, you know, with kids, you just like, this person doesn't know anything. You know, like I was there the day this person was born, like this person, you know, you just begin to realize there are things outside of intellectualism. There are things outside of experience. There are things outside of perspective that is self and developed because I put a high, I mean, like, I guess learning is a high commodity for me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's super important. So I think I end up then, you know, relegating everything that matters into that category. And some of that's being a six as an Enneagram. Like, you're in a head triad. You're in a thinking first triad. So it's a constant, like, I don't know how not to take everything through the filter of intellect, but I can learn. The whole goal, by the way, of the Enneagram, Johnny, I know you want to hear this.
Oh, please.
The real goal is that you take something from all the numbers, the healthy parts of all the numbers, like, you know, that you learn from all, you're not just supposed to be your one, but there's, you know, I don't have to react in this way. I can learn from the four, you know, who's going to be more apt to sit in their negative emotions and just feel them, as opposed to me that thinks my way out of them and positively spins things, you know, because, you know, I don't want to feel that. So I don't have to, you know, I see that as just being completely melancholy, but, you know, a little bit of melancholy in a healthy dose is part of life. And so there's just like this fullness to it. So whether it's from a kid or whether it's from others, like, yeah, being okay with people being different, you know, and that's interesting because you and I have always thought the same on a lot of things.
Yeah.
You know, and when we think differently, you know, I think early on it was probably uncomfortable. I don't think we saw a lot of things that thought that differently on, you know. But you always say that when we're off the air, like, well, I don't want a show where we just agree on everything. You know,
yeah, kind of, it's not as interesting. But yeah, to your point, though, about like you place a premium on education and intellect, but like we have intellectual conversations and I didn't graduate college. I didn't even go to college. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's like there's other ways to acquire knowledge and an intellectual like love of learning.
Sure.
Than to go get a piece of paper. And like you respect that. You weren't like, well, Johnny, I know what you think, but if you had spent 4 years at an institution like I have, then you would know.
Yeah.
You know, you've never condescend. That's what I'm saying. No. You don't condescend. So there's a different, but some people do. They're like, well, okay, well, that's how you're going to think because you didn't experience this thing I experienced, right. You know?
Yeah. I've always been jealous that you're way smarter than me. Like,
oh,
like your mind just is quicker, you know, like it just thinks.
Well, I condescend to you, but that's my right. No, I just think being dismissive of people is dangerous because you miss out on what they could offer. You know, it's not just a matter of like you turn into a jerk. It's a matter of like you're not getting, like you said, you're not getting that piece that could be the piece you're missing.
Yeah, and I'm having to. I think in the current, and again, we're not talking about politics, Johnny.
Okay,
but I think
is anything happening with politics right
no,
now?
No, nothing's happening.
I don't even
nothing to see here. I just. Where I struggle, and I actually told Laura last night, I was watching, I'm not going to, no, nothing's happening, but there may or may not have been a runoff election happening.
Oh, right.
In a certain state that may or may not determine which party is going to control the Senate. And so I was watching, and because I preached a sermon on Sunday.
Right, about digital health and.
Digital health and conspiracy and.
Right. Vetting things before you share them and.
Yeah, this may be one you actually, listener, would go listen to.
Yeah.
So, I mean, because we talked about it on the podcast some last week, but I mean, if you want to. So go to.
A deep dive.
church@pleasantgrove.com and go in there to the videos or the watch section and you can see that from last week. January the 3rd, I think, was the date. But, I decided, like, part of what we said was, hey, you know, the best place, there's security or wisdom, safety in many counselors. There, you know, the first one who states his case seems right until another comes and examines him. Like, that's the nature of things, is everything seems right when you've only heard one side.
Yeah.
And you may still be right, but there's going to be a fuller perspective when other perspectives are added to it. And so it sounds like, for a lot of people, just some moderate hocus pocus mumbo jumbo, you know, like, oh, yeah. You just want us to, and I'm saying like, no, there's a path. Like if you've pared everything down to one investment, you've pared everything down to one news source. We talked about that last week. So it would be better for you to actually listen to more than one. And then we talked about how to extrapolate out of the middle, but then watching, I mean, I was fixing something, doing some chores while I was doing it. And watching the news of the Senate runoff, you know, I decided to try that. And I flipped to a news station that is not, like, it is the most extreme news station I could think of.
Yeah.
So, and sure enough, out of the gate, I mean, they were saying things on the news station I just couldn't agree with less. Like, I just, oh my goodness, you know, like, because I have pretty strong feelings about constitutional things.
Right.
You know? And processes. I wrote my congressman this week. I'll put it that way.
Oh boy.
And trying to be engaged somewhat. But you know what? That's a part of. Laura came home and said, "Well, I'm trying to live out my own sermon here. So I have now listened to two different sides. But I at least understand. I'm not going to think of anyone here necessarily as my opponent. I'm just going to understand you know, what it is. And there were some points that really made it more clear for me, like, okay, in this constitutional crisis, this is the angle they're coming from.
Yeah.
You know, whether it has to do with state legislatures, you know, constitutionally having the right to adapt election procedures, which is all procedural. I told Lars that, well, it turns out, I mean, that viewpoint is procedural. It's not really about whether
the stuff that was in place that caused the misdoings to possibly happen, right?
Right.
Whether they did or not, well, which there hasn't been proof of.
They weren't even acknowledging any misdoings.
Right.
Is that a word? I don't know.
I don't know.
But they were not
evil deeds, dirty deeds. John.
They were down to a point. They weren't mentioning fraud.
Yeah.
They were almost saying these votes may not be legal because of a procedural, a constitutional procedural matter. Which to me, I go, look, you know, I think the whole goal of the voting process is if one person, one vote gets to actually, you know, it's democracy. Like, I want all the people to be. I don't want to exclude.
Yeah, the idea of suppressing just it stinks to me.
But I do think that the procedure's right, and I'm a constitutionalist in that respect too. I want you to do it right on this. I just think like, okay, but whether I agree with their opinion, like I understood a little better.
Right.
That there is a point to be made there. That yeah, you can't just bypass constitutional procedure. And I think the question is, and the courts have said they did not for the most part up to now. And that's where I got off a little bit. Like it's not the court's decision. I was like, well, it actually is the court's decision.
You're yelling at your television at this point.
No, I wasn't.
Okay.
But there's it is an uncomfortable discipline to listen to both sides.
Yeah.
And to allow another side to at least inform. I do think it's something that we all need to engage in more. And there may come a place where I go, look, you've lost your ability to speak into. That's fine.
If somebody's just a fool and you're listening, at some point you're like, all right, this person's
but
proven
we think
himself.
Everybody is fools now.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Like,
but I'm saying if there is a bridge too far, though, right, where you're like, I've said this person's – they've lost their value to speak into my ear every day.
There's a moment in time for me, for certain – And I want to be careful here. Jeez, Johnny, I said we're not talking about this. There was a moment when, and I've had this conversation with family members, there was a moment, regardless of outcome, regardless, I'm not stating any of my opinions on this. I'm just stating that there was a moment when POWs were made fun of in a previous election that I experienced a high degree of cognitive dissonance why so many people around me were not up in arms.
Right. While supposedly being totally on board for the troops, and every time you talk about the troops, they're just going to go, you know, it's bake sales, it's whatever for the troops. We stand for the flag. But then this guy says this, and you're like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, like...
Nothing. There was nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
Deafening silence.
It gravely, again, it's not a personal attack or someone, I'm just saying like there's a moment in time there to your point that I think that was like a, hey, I'm not sure.
Yeah. We've gone off track here.
Yeah. I'm not sure that I'm going to go along, you know, with, and everybody has a thing though.
Well, for Curry, it was that same thing, but it was the handicap thing.
Yeah.
The speech when he mocked the handicap reporter.
He literally did the mocking.
And Curry's a caregiver for a handicapped lady, and she was like, we're done. Close the shop.
And again, if you're listening right now, I'm like, this is not us going off on that. Like, I'm not saying that other parties' candidates haven't done things like that. I'm like, again, we get into that opposition-based mindset where we can't just, you know, critically think about the one thing at hand. Our point, or my point, I can't speak for you either, Johnny.
Thank you, John.
But I could say, like, yeah, it's not that that's a bridge too far, or that that candidate can no longer do anything else. I think that's a faulty mindset too. There are a lot of great things that candidate could do or did do. Because again, I think the idea that the White House, the presidency, is one person. I mean, this is an executive branch of government. So, like, there is thousands of people, you know, and often bipartisan people who are skilled at what they do, running many, many federal agencies, and you have all kinds of people who are secretaries of this and that, and cabinet members, and I mean, it's vast. It's not one person. So no, I don't have to discredit all of the work of all of those people. I'm just saying, like, that maybe tone is pretty important to me. But to me, I saw like a, hey, I'm going to struggle with that, because I think that there are some sacred things. One, I mean, I think we all should acknowledge and honor, even if I don't agree with the wars we went to fight. Like, if I think, man,
right,
how many boys died in Vietnam, when I know from a Cold War perspective, there was no end game. And, you know, we're just sending them out to patrol, mm-hmm, just in order to, you know, like, okay, you know, there's a war we weren't trying to win. I'm not the only person thinking that. That being said, it's
right. how we treat our warriors is important.
Yeah. How we honor them or don't honor them.
It says a lot about our culture. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, and since then, there's been other things. I mean, war is messy. It's rare that you have a World War II experience where there's a clear, right, a clear evil.
Call to arms and a clear victory and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's how we think of war. But it's even then, there's complexities. I mean, there's a lot of complexities in the 1930s regarding Nazi Germany. That, you know, things could have gone a lot differently if people would have listened or had opposed correct ideologies before those ideologies became what they, mm-hmm, became.
Yeah.
There's, of course, that's during the Depression. There's all kinds, right, of, you know, reasons that probably didn't happen. But again, half of Europe sort of winked at,
yeah,
at fascism, you know, and there was,
while he dug in his heels,
there was fascist parties in, mm-hmm, England and the United States and all over, and people didn't realize, I think, you know, all the outcomes that could be. So I just mean, like, yes, I have had to be corrected to say in myself, like, hey, that, all that being said, that made a difference for me. I am at a loss of why it didn't make a difference, especially for my father's generation.
Yeah.
And my father and I had those conversations before, right, he passed. Like,
well, and many of those people, too, in the boomer generation who had lost their, like, the soul of America, the piece of them that died when the Nixon scandal happened, where they're like, can we not trust our politicians anymore? They were so cynical about politics. So to see them get, to my way of thinking, hoodwinked by someone, and this cult of personality that took over, like, that was a part of it. I just couldn't understand, like, so you were so cynical and you throw your lot in with this guy, like, that was so confusing to me.
Yeah.
Like, I can understand Republican policies, politics, and you go, well, this is the guy we got.
Sure.
We ended up, he won the primaries. What am I going to do? I got to vote my conscience here, and I believe in conservative politics, whatever. But to fight you over a guy, to say, this is the guy, this is the hill we're going to die on, is for this person. I just go, I felt so estranged from my sensibility. I was like, well, how is this happening? But yeah. again, it's like you said, it's the generational thing of like, what does that even, how does it mean? How do I reconcile it in my mind? Cause it's like, I know there's a lot of great things that about that generation. I don't understand how they didn't see through it. We're going to have to edit all this out, aren't we?
Probably. Yeah. Well, and again, I think it's an insulting to them for us to say that they were targeted for that very reason. You know, there were certain things that were,
yeah,
that they felt the need to respond to, that were good in them, that, yeah, they needed to respond to, whether it be law and order or a restoration of a bygone era, you know, those kinds of things. But yeah, no, it was, and it's okay. You're like, it's okay. I think I've learned to be more okay, you know, with
not me, John. Not gonna be okay.
Nothing this to see here.
John and I have an announcement to make. We're launching our own news channel.
It's called
Fair and
John Max.
Fair and balanced.
Yeah.
Remember, that was the original Fox News thing, was Fair and Balanced, and they would have like, they would give equal time. Hannity and Combs.
Yeah.
They had Combs on there.
And it went away. Just Hannity.
Yeah. Then it was just Hannity. And it was like, I don't know. The original idea of Fox News was a counter to what CNN was going to, what they perceived CNN was, which was all left wing. So the idea of it starting out was like, okay, I can almost get on board with it. I'd watch a show like Hannity and Combs and be like, well, this, yeah, makes sense. You know, yeah, Combs would be snarky, point, counterpoint. And then, yeah, somewhere along the way, they were just like, this doesn't, they didn't drive, it was money. It was a money decision, right? It had to do with money and sponsors, probably, right? I don't know.
I don't have the history of that. I could infer, I mean, I don't know. It's been interesting to me how many of the personalities that were like Shepard Smith,
right,
is now at MSNBC.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is considered more liberal than CNN.
Mm-hmm.
But here's a guy who was
he was their guy, one of their main anchors
on the conservative, you know, station. Like, and what's her face? Shoot,
Greta Van Susteren,
Megyn Kelly.
Okay,
at NBC. You know, she left there. I don't know if Greta left. Did Greta leave?
I don't know. I just like saying Greta Van Susteren.
These are probably their two biggest personalities. You know.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting. I mean, besides Bill O'Reilly, who had the big blow up of
yeah, that was a scandal.
Yeah, scandal. But you did ask the question though, like, hey, you know, is there a place? Sure, there's a place where. I think here's the thing. I want to be able to hear sources that I don't agree with.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
but that's different than hearing a source and saying like they've shown themselves not to be trustworthy.
Right. If they're not trustworthy, then they're still. That's back to last week.
Yeah.
What are they saying that aligns with other things? What are they saying that's quoting somebody? What mm-hmm. are they saying that's a clip?
Just editorializing constantly.
Right. Yeah. So I can still hear and understanding their editorializing may help me understand. You know, better where they're coming from.
Right.
What I want to do is not be quite as dismissive. I do think that we've become so just extremist and militant on all sides. We've lost that ability to converse or to dialogue. Because yes, whether it's for one person, you know, it's an issue they can name. They're a one voter issue and they can, you know, or one issue voter.
One issue voter. One voter issue is a different thing.
One voter issue. They're, you know, a one issue voter and
one voter issues wouldn't pass. Be hard. We had one vote on this issue. And,
guys, when I ran for office, that was a one voter issue. No, I mean, I think it's a, you know, it's just, can I respect my opponent even if I consider their viewpoints to be, say, just reprehensible?
Right.
And can I still say, okay, you know, it is hard. Like, I think for you and I both, surely, that's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, I mean, you cross a line.
You know what I think it is, John?
What's that?
Neither of us have any sugar in our body.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I've been doing, this is day six. We're recording this on January 6th, right?
Mm, that's correct.
And I am in, this is 6 days now without any sugar or carbs. Wow. I have a few carbs a day, but not like enough to...
I don't like how you
carbs.
Said January 6th. This is 6 days. 6 days. There's three sixes there, Joni. Coincidence?
Whoa.
Conspiracy?
It would be.
Listen, you're a better man than I for many reasons, but one of them is you had the gumption to start yours on the 1st.
Yeah.
Which is what, a Thursday or a Friday?
Yeah, because it's January 1st. It just felt like a good, you know,
dude,
a clean start.
No, man, you got to have that weekend.
Start out on a Monday?
You start on a Monday. So I'm 3 days ahead.
Yeah. Well, I've not really dieted in...
Yeah, diet's a strong word.
I've not really dieted in almost a year and a half.
Yeah.
So this feels like... it feels pretty restrictive. I've been eating... You know what I love? A chocolate orange. You ever have a chocolate orange, John? You know what they are?
I do know.
And that's kind of an acquired... Some people like them, some people don't. Some people hate them.
Yeah.
But it's like it's literally what it sounds like. It's an orange...
You have to break it?
It's an orange. It's an orange.
It's the one you
made of
on the
chocolate.
Table.
You have to smash it to make all the pieces separate.
Yeah.
And it's got a little orange oil in it, so it's got a little orange, tiny bit of orange flavoring in it. But it's good.
I don't think chocolate and orange are supposed to go together.
And you're eating it, and after a while, you're like, I've eaten an entire chocolate orange. You look at the serving size, and you're like
it's fruit, though.
It is true.
That's what Sadie would say. She'd be like, it's got fruit in it. Yeah.
I remember there was a Minute Maid started making like this lemonade. It was basically a soda. It was Minute Maid lemonade, a 2 liter. And I remember on the bottom, they had to put in huge letters, contains no fruit juice. Like, just in case you might have thought, like, if you're a discriminating mother trying to buy something.
Just in case.
Well, it's Minute Maid lemonade, lemons.
Mm-mm.
Contains no lemon.
Not an ounce of juice was placed into this batch.
Yeah.
For us, yes, we went, listen, it was a slow descent into dietary madness.
Well, it's a COVID time. A lot of people are going through this where they're...
I did really well. Like
the COVID 20, the COVID 15.
Yeah, the first 6 months, I did really, really well.
And but you were running, too.
And I kept running.
But you
said
you're doing good on the eating, too?
I did okay.
Yeah.
I did okay. Remember, you and I would...
Try to outrun it. You go, well, I had the extra, but I'm going to...
Yeah, well, I would keep eating mostly low carb, and then I started adding this, and started adding that. And then holidays hit.
What was this and that? Carps.
Yeah. Well, I'll put it this way. By the end of this, it doesn't matter where we started, but by the end of this, we were buying generic double-stuffed Oreos because we were eating so many of them.
Hydrox.
Who can afford the real Oreos? It was just one of those like, yeah, she made the she makes so many things at Christmas that are so – and Sadie.
Yeah.
Like made – she made a yellow cake for me with – homemade cake and icing. Sadie does not make anything from scratch for my birthday.
Yeah.
And I'd be a fool, a bad father, not
right.
to walk past it all day for the next 5 days and keep just taking bites out of it, not even cutting slices, just eating directly out of it in the bed.
It's weird. I think eventually, because, you know, they got double stuff. Now they have triple stuff.
Do they?
I think they have triple stuff now. Eventually, they're going to have a tub that's just the stuff. And then you could just go in, like, you know what? Who needs a cookie at this point?
Well, they could sell just the cookies. You could dip them and get all that you want on it.
Hold the phone. Wow, I think they do that. A little snack pack for kids. I think they have little cookie sticks and you dip it in the... But it's not Oreo brand, but it's basically a knockoff.
No, I stepped on the scale Monday.
Yeah.
And
it said, walk on, do not drive on.
So, again, it didn't all happen.
It said, to be continued. I'm trying to think of every Yo Mama joke that I can think of.
It said, trucks over 50,000 pounds, pull to the right here. I noticed, I told you I went on that trip.
Yeah.
And I gained 8 pounds.
On a trip.
And trip.
How long
a week.
Trip? A week trip.
John, that's a pound a day.
Well.
Ish. Yeah. So, and then when I came home, I lost some of it back. That's what I'm saying. Like, the bottom of this kept coming up, the floor.
And your bottom kept going... sagging.
And so, but I was still running some. Yeah. And even this whole time, I ran some. But that final, like, 3 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks there where we were in December, we finally just said, forget it. Now,
well,
I ran.
It's cakes and pies, and you're grabbing things out of cookie dishes.
Late nights. Uh-huh. You know,
well,
we're not.
Like, even when I was putting the stockings together for my nieces, we were putting candy in this, like, we would buy 2 bags of Reese's Peanut Butter Cups to put in. Like, wow. Dumping them in each stocking, candy canes.
And you're like, one for you, one for me.
Exactly. You're filling up, you're going, already? You know, quality control. And my favorite part, my niece, like, we put a bunch of stuff in the top of it, and one was like a little journal and like a sticker book for her, and she's 4. And so I said, now, there's stuff in there that's wedged in there. You might have a hard time. Let me help you get it out. And she turned the stuff. She shook it. She turned it upside down and shook it. And candy went flying everywhere. I mean,
it's like
it
a Christmas pinata.
It was unbelievable.
Wow.
And then I ate some more of that. I said, well, let me help you clean this up.
Yeah, it really is that. After a while, you realize there's no bottom to this. Like, I could do this and did do this for years. It's pretty sad. Like, then you're
but
just...
But, John, I don't want the listeners to think that you're fat now.
I gained 20 pounds. That's the end of my story. I have gained 20. Like, it truly is now a COVID 20. 20, Johnny. Or 20, if you say it, I don't know.
20.
20. I could never be a news reporter.
20. I say.
So, yeah, I'm 3 days. This is day 3. I'm
of coming back to...
Reality.
Restriction.
Back to low carb, which is where I ate for a year and a half. And low carb's not hard for me. You said earlier, you just...
I'm not going to be able to stick with it. But I was just doing to see, like, could I give up, can I detox from sugar?
It's a detox.
For 10 days or whatever. So we're in the midst of that.
I'm going to go, I think, 2 months pretty strict.
I'm going to give up tomorrow, but... So we're different in that way.
I've run every day this week.
It's different running with no sugar in your body.
It is. Today...
You realize, like, wow, I was just powering myself with corn syrup, wasn't I?
It really was. Today, the day 3, in the cold, and you and I were going to eat lunch. We brought lunch to eat here before we started recording. And I didn't have a lot on board, like some breakfast, which is all protein.
You said a lot on board? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, because it was kind of
like... In your body?
I
didn't have a lot of sustenance on board.
And so it was right before. Yeah. Like, I ran right before I came here. And so, dude, it was for real. I drugged myself by my mind. Like, it was a mental workout, not a physical one. Because I can't believe I finished it. Like, I was praying in that last, like, quarter mile.
Yeah.
Like, thinking, I'm not going to make it. Like, there's no... I can't make it this last quarter mile. There's no way.
And I was behind you with a megaphone. You can do it. I wasn't.
See, even like when we come here to record on Sunday mornings or come to do services, someone always picks up a box of donuts. And for the last like year and a half, 2 years, I just don't have the donut. And so once I've broken that seal, of course I now have the donuts.
All the donuts.
One morning I woke up on a Sunday and we had Krispy Kreme donuts there from the night before.
Yeah.
And I ate one of those.
Right.
And I went to church and someone else brought a box of donuts and I ate one of those. I had two donuts from two independent sources. They weren't even in, they were not in collaboration, if you to bring it all back around today. There was no corroboration of this crime, Johnny. I just happened to have donuts in two places offered to me, and I took them both.
Sometimes you need to get your donuts from people who agree with you and people who disagree with you.
That's right. The one was Krispy Kreme. The other was a different, a totally different. One's a cake donut, and one's, what do you call a Krispy Kreme donut? It's like a...
Delicious? It's cake donuts are the worst. It just soaks up all the moisture in your body as you eat it. Somehow it's getting bigger as you
chew it. How are you eating donuts if it's soaking up all the moisture?
It's just, you can't finish it.
It's the grossest
cake donuts. Get out of here with that.
What that
Krispy Kreme, the glaze is like a, and it's all, it just melts in your mouth.
It is. It's like they're just putting straight frosting into your.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. But I like them both.
How many, there was, Nate Bargatze, our friend, he did a video on his podcast because they have somebody who's on their show that talked about they could eat 12 Krispy Kreme donuts without even thinking about it.
Oh, yeah.
And then the viewers brought them in or something, or maybe somehow they got them, like 2 or 3 dozen, just to see how far he could get. He didn't get as far as he thought he would.
But were they hot now?
I don't know if they were hot now.
See,
but,
that's the key.
But that's the thing. Do you think you could eat a dozen Krispy Kreme without,
Tony,
like, just even...
I could eat them not hot now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You could bring them in.
The hot now, it's over because they do. They literally just, they fade away.
I eat so much sugar that I remember turning to my wife one day, and I don't mean this insensitively, but I said, I really hope I don't develop type 2 diabetes. I can't even say it. Like, I'm honestly
talking. One of the first symptoms.
If I went and had my blood drawn right now, right, it's such a drastic change to how I normally have been eating, and it was bad. So I've lost 3 in 3 days.
Oh, I thought you were saying donuts.
I've lost 3 donuts, guys, and a lot of friends.
Wasn't that the old joke? Like, I've been doing the low carb diet for 2 weeks, and I've lost 14 days or whatever. I used to say, I've lost 7 friends or whatever. Whenever you go on a, I have a joke about that in my show that I say, I think it's interesting that I'm on a juice cleanse sounds a lot like I'm gonna lose friends. Because when you're on that, you can't help but talk about it. Well, I'm doing this juice thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you seen those? We've talked about those progressive commercials where they don't become your parents. Now the guy's becoming more militant, though. You notice he's getting more aggressive.
Yeah.
Like, he's doing a seminar.
Yeah.
He's getting more yelly at the people. He's just shouty at them. And there was one where he said he's doing like a conference. It was like, it's a motivational speaker, like he's a Tony Robbins character. Have you seen this?
Uh-uh.
And he goes, the slide comes up. He goes, you woke up early. No one cares. That's like a huge one.
Yeah.
Like, that's when you know you're getting older, is when you feel the need to be like, well, I got up at 6 and tell everyone.
Well,
like to get a little like affirmation from it.
Well, the girl walking through the thing on speakerphones, I had a light breakfast and I'm going to like, and she's wanting to relay all the details. Yeah, no, that's funny. No, I am, I try not to talk about it a lot. I mean, just except on my podcast to the millions of listeners. But it's a, Sadie wanted to, by the way, eat clean or healthy. And that stopped the first day.
Was Sadie's size.
Yeah.
I would never eat a healthy thing. I would wait until there's warning signs and just people waving those flags at the end of the runway, you know, like, don't, warning. I had a rental car. It just reminded me of this. I had a rental car the other day, and it had windshield wipers that did not go side to side. They started at the bottom and came up from the center, and it looked like, don't go. The bridge is out. Like, they were waving weirdly.
Oh,
anyway, so I'll wait until there's those kind of, like, we didn't, here's another example. I didn't grow up in a family where vehicle maintenance was a thing. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, I know your dad had lawn care.
Yeah.
You guys, like, change the oil every mow, right?
Yeah.
We waited until lights, readouts,
right,
flashing things came on to say, get this to it. And it's way too late.
Right.
The transmission is hanging by a thread, whatever.
A transmission thread.
The thread of a bolt. I don't know. But it's we were that kind of family. So, yeah, this idea that I'm going to, like, be a thin person and I'm just going to go get in shape to get in shape. I just want to challenge myself and see if I can run a half marathon. I would never, ever do it. I've only ever known exercise to be either to lose weight or a punishment for being fat. You know what I'm saying? So I don't understand. Sadie's my hero.
Well, it took up to my 30s, I was that way. And really, it was when Laura got pregnant that I decided, oh, I don't need to die young. I need to start. So
right, that's true. That's a big one.
That,
you have kids. You don't want to be there.
Motivated me differently.
Yeah.
And then I had some habits then, some new patterns throughout my 30s where even if I gain some weight, I'm like, again, even I've been running while I've been eating bad some. So I've been able to go out and just start at 3 miles, which is great because if I hadn't been running the whole time, I'd be out
starting
at a half a mile and I got to work up. So I mean, at least I can go do that. So there, at least that pattern's there, but I'm mad at myself this time. It's been a long time since I was like,
I think you need to cut yourself some slack.
I knew better, Johnny. I knew better. And
but it was good. There's a time to feast, right?
It is. We said that. I was feasting. And actually, we had a great time. It was actually great holidays. And it was sad that we didn't get to go everywhere. Normally, we get to go because, you know, of COVID. We had a lot. Dude, we played Uno. One time, we reshuffled the deck in a game of Uno with me and my daughter and my wife. Six times, we had to reshuffle the
deck.
One
game.
In one game.
Y'all are bad at Uno.
We get down to Uno, and we would just start just pouring on the draw fours, you know, and just kept going. So we got to play cards and do a lot of, Sadie got a new bike because she's a lot taller, you know. So like she and I, a couple days ago, rode all the way down to the boat ramp down by the, you know, lake and stuff, took a bike ride together and stuff. So, I mean, it's been great family time. And it is one of those things. Yeah, we just kind of enjoyed food, you know, we just kind of enjoyed it. But
there's a time and a place, John. And now it's time.
Now it's time for not.
It's time to pay the piper.
Yeah. Although I like keto.
It's just hard to sustain, I think. And that's why you break away and you got to have the donut. But because it's like your mind, when you say, I can't have this forbidden fruit, your mind goes, but it's your favorite thing. And you go, well, I really but I like hot wings. And you're like, yeah, but you don't want hot wings every day, do you? What if you mix in a chocolate orange?
Forbidden fruit.
Right. That's my forbidden fruit.
Yeah, it's literally. No, and I did finally get tired of wings a little bit.
Yeah.
Although tomorrow is supposed to be the 70 wing night. Sadie has a volleyball practice, so I don't know. Well, I eat them all week, though. They're my keto lunch.
I've heard tell that some people in your family are kind of tired of the wings.
Oh, yeah. Sadie got tired of the wings.
Yeah. I think when I was at the volleyball game where I almost ruined Sadie's comeback, Laura was saying, God, the wings. She was so, like, it's wing night, huh? She was like, oh, no.
Yeah, she's doing great. Mm-hmm. She's doing a keto plan, but it's a little different. She's like preparing meals and counting macros a little more. It's like a marriage of not, because keto, the way I normally do, I just eat whatever I want as long as it's these kinds of foods. So she's doing a little bit of both. But like for me, I find comfort in the same thing every day.
That's true. There is some of that.
She does.
And I really only like 7 or 8 things anyway. So it's not like I have this huge, wildly diverse diet.
See, I love Indian food and I love Thai food. I love all kinds of food.
You're trying
just
to make yourself sound more global than me,
Johnny,
aren't you?
What I'm saying is
I embrace all cultures.
Unlike some bigoted eaters that I know. No, but she's such a culinary person. Like she's got such a sophisticated palate that it just wears on her really quick. Like she just gets, I can't have the same thing. I'm like, ooh, the same thing. Like I like that. And pour some ranch on it. But I like the sophisticated stuff too because I'm married to her. So Johnny,
ranch is a thing. It's definitely like, it's a very white trashy thing. I was thinking about meatloaf the other day. Meatloaf with this ketchupy glaze baked onto
so
it
good.
Is completely white trash, and I like it. And you have to be okay with that.
Dude.
Like, yes.
I don't think meatloaf is. It's just Southern.
Meatloaf, but
what a gross characterization.
It's just very. I think meatloaf came about because it was like, we only have this much meat. How can we stretch it? Throw in these cracker crumbs and this other crap. And then, like, oh, it's kind of bland. Put this ketchup glaze on it and bake it. And then we're like, huh, kind of good. But I love meatloaf.
I
don't just like it. I love meatloaf.
Yeah, it's in my top
But even
five.
As I'm eating it, I'm going, I am trash.
Do you mix your meatloaf with mashed potatoes?
Of course.
Of course.
But you can't do that on keto.
No, I don't.
You don't want to have meat and potatoes together like an animal.
But my wife makes a keto meatloaf.
Yeah, okay.
Super
We
good.
Had that this week, and I didn't care for it. You had mixing, what, pork rinds or something?
I think she uses maybe almond
it's like
something.
Powdered dust of pork rinds.
She makes it where it tastes just like it. Like, I can't
tell
the
difference. Well, it wasn't bad. It's just When I know what my wife's meatloaf normally tastes like, I'm like, this was good. And when normally she makes it, I'm like, this, holy moly, was great.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
we're gonna. I'm gonna go 10 days. You're gonna go for the rest of your life, evidently.
No, here's the deal.
I'll give you a Krispy Kreme donut right now.
I have one right here in this jacket pocket. I am going to. The plan is, look, 1 month at a time.
Yeah.
Like
sweet
Jesus. At least I'm going to go a month and see. Because here's what usually happens is if I've made it that far,
yeah,
then I've lost the cravings and I'm like, okay, I want to go another 10 pounds or whatever, you know, and it's not going to be hard.
Can you lose 10 more pounds though after a month like that? Because you're going to lose. You're not going to be here.
Keto slow. I've lost three. I'll probably lose another maybe two or three. And then I will stick for like 2-3 weeks. Like keto for me is a very
slow. That's when I would lose heart. I'd be like, well, this isn't even worth it.
But as long as I don't have some major craving, it's got to get past that point where I'm not craving anymore. And then it's like, okay, but I feel better. I don't feel tired in the afternoons, all those kinds of things. So,
but my way, I get to have a Cinnabon.
Yeah, I do. Gosh, she made cinnamon rolls. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Oh, Sunday. On our last day, she got up. When I came home from church, she had made biscuits and sausage. She had a pack of biscuits somewhere and made it. And we had this. Have you ever gotten the jelly from IKEA?
Mm.
There's like a.
We don't have an IKEA, John. Where are you getting this?
Memphis. We pick up some and we bring it.
You go to Memphis for jelly?
No, I go to Memphis for IKEA. And
you got to put the jelly together? It's just like a bunch of ingredients.
Like a bunch of,
now, put this together. And then
it's a bunch of
then
berries.
Put it in the fridge. Yeah.
What's it called? It's called, it's not boysenberry. Oh, she's yelling again.
Boysenberry sounds way too much like poisonberry. Like whoever came up with that, hey, have some of these boysenberries. What? You know, what? It's like you're immediately.
What is the name of the berry?
Dip the tips of your arrows in this.
It's a, it's a Swedish, anyway, we get it. We always pick up some for our friends too. Anyway.
Everything has a Swedish name.
Yeah, correct.
And that furniture, like Fnirksen.
Yeah.
it's a dresser. Yeah.
It's, anyway, I came home, brought Zaxby's.
Right.
Ate wings, because I was going to go and maybe and start a little bit of keto.
And she derailed you.
No, she didn't. She was going to the store. Then I went over to the stove where the biscuits still were, and I ate a biscuit and jelly.
Right.
Then I pulled Sadie's toast out of her chicken tender basket, put more jelly on it.
Wait a minute. Did you have Sadie's permission for this?
She doesn't like her toast. That's why she's so skinny. Although she eats chicken tenders and french fries, but I don't know. So by the end of it, I'd had a keto meal plus biscuits and jelly, plus toast and jelly. And at that point, I think I just went in and grabbed a Crisco can and just started eating straight out of it. Mm-hmm. So I knew it was like, wow, I've not only gone off the rails, my patterns are off the rails. So,
but we're going to get it back because it's a new year.
New year, guys.
And it's not about like one decision. It's a million little decisions, John.
That's right.
That set you on a path. They chart a course.
Mm.
I don't know.
You made a good decision today, listener.
I think so.
You listened, yeah. You
made it all. Thanks for listening. Thanks for putting us in one of your. Maybe you don't agree with everything we say, but we're one of your sources.
Yeah.
You can be like, well, that's one way to think of it, losers. And then you go listen to who you really believe in.
That's right.
And we've balanced it out.
And you've lived out the sermon by listening to us. Now, I think that we're honest on the show. Yeah, we're honest. We just, part of the deal is everything is, truthfully, when we talked off the air, everything is so, I mean, to be honest with you, people are attacking the U.S. Capitol while we're recording this. Like, they've breached the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we're in a really weird place.
It's a polarized time.
Yeah, we're trying to be careful not to just add to mayhem. We're speaking truth. There's some things worth speaking up for. But literally, the Capitol is under attack by protesters as Congress argues over presidential election inside for only the second time in American history. So, there's a lot going on. And we want you to feel encouraged and also equipped to know over time. Yeah.
By the time this airs, we don't know what will have happened and or we will have each eaten a dozen donuts from stress.
That's what you're saying. Or we have eaten each other.
That's true. That would be a really stark.
Quickly, things went downhill.
Yeah, man, what a dystopian future.
It's like Dwight, whenever they get stuck in the elevator.
He establishes a pee corner immediately.
What are you doing? We've been in here 30 seconds. Oh, that's funny. Hey, but thanks for listening. Make sure you check out. I do want to say to any of our Google listeners, apparently there's been something with our Google feed that's been messed up. We apologize. We have our tech team on it.
We're working on it. We hear Google's not a big company, so they're a small
upstart.
They're
really easy to get a hold of.
And we're... They got some bugs and stuff they're working out still over at Google, maybe?
We have fixed the problem.
Are we being shadow banned?
Oh, my goodness.
Probably not.
No.
We're
not important
enough.
Don't
care. Yeah. Nobody cares.
We have fixed the problem like 3 times, and it keeps reoccurring, so we apologize for that. But our crack team of professionals is working on that technical problem, so hopefully you'll be listening to this easily off of one of your Google apps. And if not, maybe it's time to buy an iPhone. I don't know. I'm just kidding.
You did not.
I'm sorry.
Android shame.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I'm great with it. We appreciate you listening on all platforms. And you can find all those platforms at talkaboutthatpodcast.com, mm-hmm. where you can also find our social media outlets, if you will, platforms. And you can also go there and see our Patreon page.
That's true. You can kick in if you like.
Yeah, if you'd like to. It'd be a great time. Great time right now.
We're not begging.
No.
But we're just saying, hey, if you like the show, this helps us make the show.
It does. It does help. So it helps us reach more people. So send us your questions, though. Leave a review. And let us know what you want us to talk about as we move forward. So thank you, as always, for joining us. We'll see you next week on Talk About That.
There's nothing in this world that he cannot do if we truly allow his love.
We can do nothing without him. Anything that we do apart from him is not something that's permanent.
We all need his grace. That's everybody. We are all broken people on our way to a place that we believe is waiting on us in heaven.
You can find more of Bridges with Monica Schmelter at lifeaudio.com.
In Christ, we are all one family.
Amen.